And welcome to This Green Earth. I'm Claire Wiley, and joining me now is acclaimed documentary director and producer, Sarah Dosa. Sarah is returning as a filmmaker to Sundance this year with a film titled Time and Water. Sarah, thank you so much for joining us today on This Green Earth.
Oh, thank you so much, Claire. It's wonderful to be here.
Well, it is truly a pleasure to have you on the show. As many of our listeners, I'm enthralled by your film Fire of Love, which screened at Sundance a few years back and then went on to earn an Oscar nomination. It was just absolutely breathtaking. Your clarity and voice in that film was really wonderful to watch. And the film, of course, being about volcanologists, Katya and Maurice Kraft, whose love for each other in the volcanoes was so captivatingly portrayed. So thank you so much for bringing that to us, first of all. Fire of Love was amazing.
Well, thank you so much. That's so kind of you to say. It was quite an adventure to go on with my team back at Sundance 4 years ago now. I can't believe it's been 4 years since Fire of Love premiered. But, you know, it's largely the same team, plus some wonderful new additions on Time and Water. And so it just means so much to me to bring the film out into the world at Sundance, the last Park City Sundance this year.
Yes, we are getting pretty nostalgic about all of our Sundance experiences and looking back. And I just had a conversation with Jill Tidman from the Redford Center, and she absolutely sung your praises. But we were also just talking about how in Park City, we are so connected to the natural world. And Robert Redford was so connected to Utah that it meant a lot to us to have environmental films in Sundance, and you being one of those filmmakers that is bringing this to light is really wonderful. And you've literally now gone from fire to ice. So you're making this leap. And can you share with me what Time and Water is about? It seems both very human and very natural. And you've got this parallel of subjects going on with the natural world and the human world. So can you talk to me about who those subjects are?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So Time and Water is the story of Andri Snær Magnusson, who is a celebrated Icelandic sci-fi writer and poet who is tasked with kind of an impossible task. He's asked to write a eulogy for the first glacier to be declared dead in Iceland. However, his grandparents were among the first to explore and photograph Iceland's glaciers. So in the span of just two generations, you have this massive shift of those who are first encountering glaciers as kind of this eternal fixture of Iceland's landscape. And then Andri, who's asked to kind of say goodbye to the ice of Iceland. So we explore that quandary through Andri's family's own archives. His grandparents took just beautiful images, both still and film images of glaciers in Iceland. And then Andri, inspired by them and inspired also by some of the cultural archives housed in Iceland's National Archives, kind of becomes the own archivist of his family and begins recording kind of everything from the birth of his four kids to trying to really grasp his grandparents' stories as they begin to age and then very sadly die themselves. And so by collaging together these archival materials, along with some of our own originally shot footage of glaciers, we're trying to really create a portrait of a time where glaciers are alive and extremely powerful, in hopes that we can kind of use these stories and these images of glaciers to inspire a love and care for a landscape that is rapidly slipping away. So it's at once a human story. It's a story about glaciers. It's a story about time and memory. It's also kind of a sci-fi film. It takes the form of a cinematic time capsule. So that's a nod to Andri's own work as a sci-fi writer. But also so much of the film is about what it means to live in a habitable future. And sometimes sci-fi can be an interesting and playful way to get at these kind of heavier themes of loss and grief that we're experiencing at this critical juncture in our planet's history.
You called it a time capsule. And so in this day and age when we are moving very rapidly through these changes in our climate, these changes in our environment, it seems we look back and we don't realize maybe in the time that they were happening, how precious those memories are, what our earth looked like and what we are losing, and then bringing that parallel in of our own humanity and our own lifespan and how we are all interconnected. So when you set out to do this film, did you have that clarity to bring that to light? Or as you worked through the film, were these themes just becoming more and more prevalent and just guiding you during the process?
That's so beautifully said, and is such a thoughtful question that I think I'll probably spend a lot of time thinking about that. But briefly to answer it, I feel like when my team and I set out to make the film, we were very inspired by how interconnected glaciers are with all water systems, not just in Iceland, but of course, our entire planet. And we're also thinking about human memory and how interconnected we are as generations, how you can connect to your ancestors and to your future descendants through intergenerational storytelling, through myth, through just the transmission of story across generations through time. So these were concepts that guided us from the very beginning. However, once we began shooting on glaciers, I had the most phenomenal team, an incredible set of producers who made it possible to shoot on such a perilous landscape as glaciers, and a fantastic director of photography, Pablo Alvarez Mesa, who has such a way of channeling kind of the power of the natural world through image. And then, of course, incredible sound recordists, too, to really capture the sonic life of glaciers as well. So being on glaciers with my extraordinary team taught us so much more. We were so humbled by the vastness of the ice, being surrounded by the mountains in Iceland that, you know, were created through the volcanoes underneath the glaciers themselves. We felt our kind of small, precarious human existence in a way that I think very much filtered into kind of how we began to understand the film. However, we were met with this devastating realization, which is that glaciers are now their lifespan that, you know, in some places glaciers are millions of years old. In Iceland, they're a couple thousand years old. In some cases, 1,000 years old. They're now arriving at a moment where glacier lifespan is becoming almost as short as a human lifespan. And that realization being on them was so sobering for us to think of this vastness as becoming fragile. I think it's that embodied experience of shooting that really did critically shape our approach to how to tell this story, of both to show how sentient, how powerful and alive glaciers are, but also to get at some of the urgency of the moment that we're in. So I'm forever grateful for that, and forever grateful also for a team of Icelanders who could really share kind of what it meant to live in Iceland and experience this from their own kind of cultural reality and lived experience. Of course, guided by Andri himself, but so much of our production team was Icelandic as well. So I could go on and on and on, but that's one of my favorite things about documentary is the interplay between kind of the blueprint you set out with and then kind of how it all becomes transformed both through production and post-production. And certainly the edit taught us all kinds of new things that we discovered in that process as well. But I can speak more to that later perhaps.
Well, it seems like it would be very hard to trim this down and to encapsulate it, because it feels like there would be so much to go through and work through here. How is it working with Andri and collaborating with another artist that probably also has some vision and a sense of how this story will play out? What is that collaboration like?
Oh, it was a wonderful collaboration with Andri. He's a writer who's inspired me for many years. And one of the things I love so much about Andri's work, not just in his writing, but also in his own films and his own kind of lectures and multimedia work, is he has this incredible way of drawing connections that seem like they wouldn't necessarily go together, but they do. And he has a way of writing about these overwhelming and abstract concepts like the climate crisis, like geologic time, but he finds these very personal ways that allow you to enter into them through your own emotional experience. And so kind of using that way of thinking and of writing that is so kind of essential to Andre's work was a guide for us throughout the process. So I'll just say, like, he was very inspiring from the outset. And then as we were making the film, you know, he was in Iceland a lot of the time. I'm based in Los Angeles. One of my editors is in New York, another in San Francisco. And then we had a third editor in LA at the end. So we're all kind of spread out, but we're all like gathering in various hubs, whether it was New York or LA or sometimes Iceland to get together. And it was such an iterative process. My editors, Aaron Casper, Jocelyn Chaput, and Mark Harrison, we would be kind of working on a scene, working on the writing. And then sometimes I would just text Andre and be like, hey, we're using this language. Does this feel true to you? And he'd be like, yes. Or sometimes he would be like, no, but something more like this feels more like me. Sometimes he would kind of write a scene and it would stay almost verbatim in the film, or sometimes he would write something that didn't quite match the edit. And so we would then work with it, but it was always a flow, kind of a back and forth that I'm so grateful for. So we could kind of get his personality and his perspective woven into the film. It's funny. We just finished the film like less than a week ago, so it's all very fresh. But if you could see me, I have a big smile on my face thinking about the process. And I should also say, like, Aaron and Jocelyn and Mark really are deserving so much praise for their extraordinary editing work. They really were so deeply thoughtful, so intentional about their choices. And how they're able to kind of create this feeling of memory through working with the many archives.
Yeah, I'm sure that editing was such an undertaking because it is such a personal story. And then you have these very dramatic visuals, and it's probably hard to let any of it go. In watching your films and in seeing how you blend this human experience with nature, and that you take those explorations as a filmmaker and you're taking us to these incredible places on our earth that many won't be able to go or see for themselves. And we get to have this very visceral reaction to this and immerse ourselves in this natural environment. What led you to do this type of story making? What fulfills you through these types of films?
That's a great question. And I think it's one I'll probably forever be asking myself. I feel lucky that I grew up in Northern California, and I was always so inspired by the power of the ocean, the beauty of the forests. And I think from a young age, I somehow felt connected to nature in a very deep way. I also grew up with a mother who is a cultural anthropologist who, around family dinner tables, we would be talking about how humans make meaning and how relations of power shape kind of our understanding of the world. And so I think that for me growing up, and especially once I, entered kind of the adult world and was thinking through my profession, I think exploring kind of the stories and how humans make meaning with more than human nature, so to speak, has just been something that I've found deeply inspiring and provides kind of a window to kind of think about not just our humanity, but our interconnectedness. And I do think at this moment in history, with so much uncertainty around us, and as you mentioned at the top of our conversation, watching our landscapes change so radically around us, I do feel like this orientation towards storytelling brings me a sense of meaning and perhaps solace, so to speak, at a time when there is a lot of loss around us. So And I feel so lucky, I guess. I'm endlessly inspired by kind of the life force that is a volcano or the power that is a glacier. And to try to, in some way, gesture towards representing kind of the aliveness of our natural world through the image and sound that the art form of cinema provides is truly it's so meaningful to me. I really feel like I have my dream job. So I'm profoundly grateful for it and couldn't be more happy that, my incredible team and I get to return to Sundance, where we're met by the beauty and the power of the mountains and such a rich tradition of storytelling around nature. It's really an honor.
Yes, we, like I said, had spoken to Jill about that seed that was planted here by Robert Redford and how he wanted to bring voices that might not otherwise be heard and let us all feel this collaborative engagement around a film, around a subject. Then documentaries especially really allow for us to understand and get education where we might not otherwise know about these topics or know about these places in our world. So when you do look at a festival like Sundance and you get to see these audiences gather around your film, when they're in there and they have this very shared experience, what is it that you love the most? What feeds you the most when you watch those audiences taking in your film?
Oh, that's a great question. I think it's such a humbling experience to watch an audience take in a film that I've made. It's a little scary at first, to be honest. You never quite know how it'll land. But I think one of the things I'm really grateful for is that is seeing like people interpret things according to their own experiences. This film, we haven't premiered it yet, so I have no idea how people will take it, but it's very specific to Iceland. It's centers an Icelandic protagonist and an Icelandic family, and it really contemplates what does it mean to lose the ice of Iceland. And yet we're so hopeful that it is a film that can have a much more universal resonance. So much of the film is also about what does it mean to lose your ancestors, to lose your grandparents, specifically in Andre's story. And so I think that it will be fascinating to see how people bring their own experiences of how they've grappled with both loss as well as love, how people understand what or how to relate to their own changing landscapes. It's these kinds of dialogues that I'm really looking forward to, where the very intimate experience that we're presenting in the film can hopefully be an outstretched arm to these wider experiences that so many of us are sharing right now, granted very unevenly sharing, depending on where we live and our access to resources. But that's, I think, something I'm really, really looking forward to. It's always an adventure, every new film that is released, to see what people bring to it themselves. But it's always such a gift to hear from audiences and really kind of builds kind of a second life, so to speak, onto the film once it's completed.
In looking back on Sundances over the years, what films spoke to you the most? Can you think of a film or two that really landed for you that you still keep with you in your mind's eye?
Oh, that's a great question. There's so many. I feel lucky to have gone to, I think this will be my ninth Sundance, actually. So many incredible films. There's one film directed by Kirsten Johnston called Camera Person that had an enormous impact on me. Such an incredible work of cinematic storytelling that was an inspiration for this film, and seeing it at Sundance was incredibly moving for me. There's a film I saw called All These Sleepless Nights that was actually produced by my own producer, Shane Boris, that was in 2016. And that was just so wonderfully immersive and such an interesting hybrid documentary style that also led to Shane and I had a great conversation at that Sundance together that ended up leading to our own collaborative relationship. So that film and that experience has like many deep meanings for me too, and just how seeing a film can then lead to a conversation that can then lead to a collaboration that can then lead to a changed life. And so it's those kinds of things that I so love about Sundance is kind of how community can form through the cinema going. But there's many films that stand out. I think the last Sundance I was at, I saw a film called Mil Setando that was incredible. And the Sauna Sisterhood film was absolutely incredible. There's so many films at Sundance that I've loved through the years, and I feel so privileged to have gotten to see.
Well, we feel so privileged to have you in our community here in Park City and sharing these beautiful films that you have created and this very thoughtful process that you have just walked us through. It is encouraging. I think our hearts grow bigger when we hear a filmmaker such as yourself talk about this and the importance of environmental filmmaking and what it means to put that out into the world. And so we appreciate you and your thoughtful answers and your time here on this green earth. And I'm curious, because it seems creatives and filmmakers always have something cooking in the back of their brain, no matter what's going on. Is there something, a topic or something that you are working on or looking forward to bringing to life after Time and Water? Or are you sitting in this moment right now and really just absorbed here?
Oh, I'm very excited to be at this moment, but I am actually at the very, very early stages of another film that I'm co-directing with Mexican filmmaker Otilia Padua Portillo about earthquakes in Mexico City, told through the story of September 19th, which historically in Mexico City has been a day when there have been many earthquakes. Namely, there have been three major earthquakes all on September 19th. So we're kind of looking at that phenomenon and the storytelling around it, and very early stages, but collaborating with Otilia on this project has been, and also with many members of the same team from Time and Water. So there's a lot of devastating things about that story because it involves such a massive loss of life in these earthquakes. But again, looking at how people kind of make meaning out of our alive and dynamic earth, whether it's volcanoes or glaciers, or in this case, earthquakes, is something I'm so endlessly curious about. So that's the next adventure on deck that looking forward to embarking upon once kind of things settle down after Sundance.
Sure. Well, it sounds like that story is in wonderful hands, and I hope that we have a chance to see that as well. I'm sure we will. Thank you. I can't thank you enough. Sarah Dosa, who is an acclaimed documentary director and producer, has a film called Time and Water in the 2026 Sundance Film Festival, and I hope everyone out there has a chance to see it, and I'm so excited to be sitting in that theater and taking in another one of your beautiful film. So thank you so much for being a voice on this green earth.
Oh, thank you so much, Claire. I really appreciate our conversation, and thanks for having me on.
Thanks for listening to This Green Earth. If you have an idea, we'd love to hear from you. Give us your ideas and topics, your storylines. It's thisgreenearth@kpcw.org. You can also find us wherever you listen to your podcast. If you like the show and you learned something new, make sure you leave a review, and we'd appreciate it if you click 5 stars.